Hello and welcome. This is The Thing About Cars. Glad you could join us. I'm Mickey Desai, one of your hosts around the table. We've got Becca.
Hello.
And Ben.
Yeah.
And Dave.
Hey,
hey. Hey, good morning.
Dave, excellent. Great. So I know we're in the effort to further segment the show and to get a little bit more organized with our presentation. I'm pleased to see that we're going to talk about Camaros today. It's one of my favorite cars. And I have a couple of quick items of Camaro trivia for us for Grand Trivia Auto. You guys ready?
We're ready.
Excellent. So I've got three questions, so we're just going to use all three. When was the first model year of the Camaro? Was it 1966, 67, 68, or 69?
So you didn't even have to give me options.
Okay, what was it, Becca? Go ahead.
1966.
That's correct. That is absolutely correct. Let me make sure, because that's the one thing I didn't actually verify.
Well, it went on sale in 1966, but for the 1967 model year.
Yeah, right.
Well, and there's a reason that I say it that way, so we can always delve into that with Camaro segments.
Yes, let's do that. The second question I've got for you guys, when we may save both of these for the end of the episode. So now that we've got the 66 thing out of the way, some of the rarest Camaros are referred to as Copos or Capos, C-O-P-Os. What does C-O-P-O stand for? Does it stand for Camaro Official Production Order? Does it stand for Chevrolet Optimum Performance Order? Does it stand for Central Office Production Order? Or last choice, does it stand for Chevrolet Official Performance Order? You guys need me to read those again?
See, all of my key words were scattered in there enough that now I'm confused because I was originally thinking package order.
Right.
You know, and then I was hoping to fill in the blanks, and now it's like, wait a minute.
Right. Well, the term is applied to a number of cars, not just the Camaro, but yes. So what does Copo or Capo stand for? And the second official Grand Trivia Auto question for the day was, before it became the Camaro, what was it called? And we may actually already answer this as part of the cultural collision segment, Dave. But before it became the Camaro, what was it called? The Panther, the Penguin, the Panda, or the Switchback?
I know what it should have been called.
What's that?
Oh, you should know it's going to be something snarky. Come on.
All right. So those are the choices for Grand Trivia Auto after a bit of selected editing. So Dave, you're going to do a cultural collision segment today all about the Camaro, right?
I am. We're doing about the bitchin' Camaro.
Right on. Please take it away.
So yeah, one of the reasons I just teed this up, we were talking about in a previous show about the Ford Thunderbird and its role in culture. And, it's that thing, I thought growing up in a General Motors town, I was never a GM fan. I didn't fit in that town for a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. But the Camaro was actually assembled. The original Camaros were assembled not far from where I went to school in the Cincinnati production plants. And I started poking around with it, and every time you say Camaro, I immediately cue up the Dead Milkman song, Pitching Camaro, in my mind and sing it for 2 days. But I thought it's kind of like the Thunderbird showed up in immense amount of places in culture. So has the Camaro. So I thought we would just poke around a little bit with it. There have been 6 generations of Camaro and
6
because, yeah 6 and what I thought
it's
was
not counting when they were not in production of time.
It does stretch the time. There's been 6 generations of it, but they didn't produce them from 2003 until 2010, so there was a big stretch of non-production. One of the things, not even though I'm not a fan of General Motors cars per se, like I am of other brands. Becca and I talked about this one time. Ford has a really sometimes dicey product strategy where they'll like the Thunderbird was a good example. They started out producing it as a sports car, and before you knew it, it was like a mega sedan. General Motors has not had that problem, especially Chevy. They built the Camaro as a pony car, And, you know, from the first generation up until now, they've left it in that slot. Interestingly, the Camaro, you know, Camaro, one of the things as I was researching it online, no one actually completely agrees what the word Camaro means. That when it was first launched, the statement was that the vice president of Chevrolet merchandising, Bob Lund, said, "Oh, it comes from the French word for, or, you know, French slang word that means pal or comrade." But actually, you know, talking to people who speak French, there's actually no word Camaro in the French language. Certainly doesn't mean comrade or friend. And I won't give away the answer, but that right up until it went to market, it actually had a different name that they were going to roll with. And then they realized, essentially they said, hey, all of our cars start with C. The Chevette and the Corvair and the Chevelle and the Chevy 2 and the Corvette. And so they Impala and Nova. And they're like, so we got a name with a C because all of our cars are start with C, except for the ones that didn't. So, it came out in 67 and basically was available as a two-door coupe or a convertible. And it was designed, they never made any secret of it. It was designed to go head-to-head against the Mustang.
And that's what I was going to mention if you didn't touch on it. We had talked about the tit-for-tat between Chevy and Ford at one point. And while Ford was... The Mustang was made to compete with a different car, with Mustang being so popular, Chevy came out with the Camaro in response. And that's what aids in how I know when the Camaro came out.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think one of the things also, Becca, correct me if I'm wrong, the Mustang was actually, I think, originally intended to compete with the Corsair. Corvair, rather.
The Corvair, yes.
Yeah. And then Ralph Nader came out with the book, the finding that the Corvair was not safe at any speed.
I was about to say, that's what it was called. The book by Ralph Nader is called Unsafe at Any Speed. It was not about the Pinot, it was about the Corvair.
Yeah. And so they're like, oh, we got to come out with another car. Yeah, so Mustang very successfully competed with the Corvair, thanks to Ralph Nader. And so they came out, essentially with what we used to refer to as the college Cadillac.
Cadillac, right. I love that.
Yeah, but, there's been a pretty successful car. There's been like 5.5 million of them produced. They've pretty much always stayed in the same market niche. And I think this is the place where I need some help from you all, because you all know racing better than I do. Camaro's had a really successful run in the race circuit that I don't think Mustangs have come close to, but I could be wrong on that. It's been the official car of international race champions, and there's a long history of Roger Penske working with Camaros in the Trans Am series. Just from a business perspective, the car seems to have really done a better job of owning what I'm going to call the testosterone niche. than other cars have.
As far as the racing and all that, I really just don't have all the facts and figures and stuff like that on the racing, because honestly, I'm just purely about the car. And it's like my defense of my own car. I don't care if it's got three wheels and one door. It's not about how fast it goes for me. So there's a lot of lore from the past that I might know little bits about, but as far as its racing history or numbers or any of that, I honestly don't have it. So, I mean, it's something we could always look up.
But you're just not into racing. And I don't think I'm the same way. I'm into the cars and I'm into the people, but I've never cared enough to follow the sport of racing.
Right. I mean, I've watched it. I have gone to some fabulous, it just totally escaped my brain what I was going for. I've gone down to, some of the drag races and whatnot with Mustang. And I love watching it. It is, it's great. But yeah, it's not enough of what I'm in it for me to memorize the statistics or anything like that. I just love the car.
Well, Dave, exactly. You're about to get into it, Dave, but Camaro actually had a prestigious moment there in the very beginning in racing, didn't they?
Well, yeah, you know, so it was one of the vehicles that the SCCA sanctioned in the Trans Am series.
Yeah.
And then I think, you know, if I'm correct, pretty much every Chevy team in NASCAR has used it as their base model since something like maybe the late 90s or early 2000s.
Huh. No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the bigger thing, the reason, you know, I just kind of fixated at it. It wouldn't be an episode without me bringing up midlife crisis cars. This was my brother's midlife crisis car.
Uh-huh.
And whereas, you know, when we did the segment on the Thunderbird had very specific spots in culture. When you look at all of the movies that the Camaro has had place in, you know, they're much more, for lack of a better term, testosterone focused films and roles than other cars have had. In fact, you know, when you go to the Urban Dictionary and you know, I was just Googling different things about the Camaro, the top definition on the Urban Dictionary of a Camaro is a common site of unintentional human reproduction.
And also when you say testosterone driven, are you trying to avoid the word mullet?
Well, it's also interesting to note in the testosterone department that at no point in the 1970s was there a little downsized Camaro too.
Oh, no, they just stopped production.
Not in the 70s.
Not in the 70s. Yes, it was an overall snark.
So anyway, you know, I don't really know where to take with that. But Becca, you actually surprised me to say you liked the car. I would not have thought.
Yeah.
This would have been on your radar screen.
Wait. When did I say I liked it?
I thought you said you liked this. I like the Camaro. Or is it, you're just talking about liking, you know, the Mustang and the Camaro got spilled into it?
Camaro got tangled into Mustang's lore, Mustang's history, just because of their competition that the Camaro was introduced to compete with Mustang. It's a back and forth thing. It got very intertwined. That being said, you know, if something is your favorite team, that's always going to be the one you love. I forgot how I was going to handle. I had something all in my brain with that one. But no, it's a love hate. You know, Mustang will always be my favorite. I don't care who.
If you had an opportunity, would you put a Camaro in your garage?
Okay, I'm gonna tell some people some very little known information about me. Okay, this is privilege between, you know, you guys and, you know, whoever's listening. most people don't know about me. My first car was a 1989 Camaro IROXY convertible.
Nice.
I had a Camaro and then I had five Mustangs. So think about that. And I dig at it simply because I get a lot of crap about my Mustang. Okay. Not just from other Camaro people, but it's a lot of the smack talk. At the end of the day, I don't have anything against the car. I have a history with it. It's nice enough. I didn't like it when it was redesigned back. What was it, mid-90s, Dave?
Yeah, it's like they did right out. If you had an 89, they redesigned it in like 93. And then that body style went from 93 for another 9 years.
Mm-hmm. Right. That went up until it was discontinued for the 2002 body, right?
Right.
But see, to me, do you remember the Geo Storm?
Yes.
Okay, the Camaro looked like somebody squished a Geostorm to me.
You're right. It did.
It always looked like that to me. And I was like, somebody just ran up over that thing and called it a Camaro.
I think I think that generation probably was just kind of a warming over of what they'd been making since 82. I think under the skin, it was mostly the same. And they just kind of tried to freshen it a little bit and it didn't work very well.
They splattered it. but it's really more about the rivalry with the Smack Talk. It's a nice enough car. But one of the things that I've always said is that, you know, I was sad when they discontinued it and said, you know, you can't be number one without a number two. was always my response to how do you feel about the Camaro being canceled? So
that's a good response. I never even thought about that. But I'm going to steal. You can't be number one without a number two.
I like that. But
that's actually profound. That's wise.
Well, thank you. I have my moments. I feel like I should twirl my hair and giggle now.
No, not at all. It's like, you know, like I was expecting a lot of, you know, heavy duty sarcasm, not to have an inspirational moment today.
Exactly.
And I gave away a very little known thing. Unless somebody has known me for a very long time, they don't know that there's been a Camaro in my life.
Right.
It's like you're talking about, you know, the very brief marriage right out of college.
It's the one that we don't talk about.
Yeah, it doesn't count anymore. Yeah. What else you got, Dave?
I think that's it. That wraps it up. That I don't know that I can top, you know, a deep philosophical moment coming in from Becca.
Well, I've got two thoughts. One is going way, way back there about the origins. Even though the French thing may not be true, they did use the colors of the French flag on some very early Camaro badging.
Even some late one, didn't they? Didn't they have that tri-bar in the back?
They may have. I don't recall. The only one I recall for sure is the early, but you may be correct. And the other, go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, I was just thinking, I didn't realize that my thoughts actually made a sound anymore. Sorry. Oh. I wasn't trying to interrupt. I was thinking it was poking at the Mustang tri-bar even though, because that was red, white, and blue.
I don't know, but...
But I was assuming American. Anyways, continue with your second thought. Sorry.
Yeah, I actually have a third now, too. I'll be quick. One of the coolest Camaro moments I ever had was a couple of years ago during one of my business travels. I was in Indianapolis, and I had a few hours to kill, so I went to the museum at the racetrack there. Mm-hmm. And they just happened to be having this exhibit. They've got, you know, one room in the museum that is, you know, exhibits that change. And in that room, at that point, they were doing 50 years of Camaro pace cars. Mm-hmm. That was cool.
That is cool.
Yeah, they're mostly convertibles, mostly orange and white somehow, but really kind of nifty to look at. If anybody can travel in time back to 2 years ago, go see that exhibit. The last thing I thought of was there's a great moment in Mad Men where the Camaro is being introduced and one of the characters almost wrecks it.
Oh. Oh, boy. Okay. So cool. Thanks for that. Excellent cultural collision, Dave. That was good stuff.
Great.
Yeah. Let's switch gears and let Ben take a moment. So this segment is called Ben Takes a Moment. Go for it, Ben.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to take a moment to talk about hot rods.
Oh.
Now we're talking the actual hot rod culture, like rat rods, rust rods, hot rods, that kind of thing.
Patience, grasshopper.
But the anticipation is building. I don't want to be disappointed, you know.
Right. So anyway, no, you really think about it. It's something that hasn't always been with us, except, you know, for people who are alive today. Yeah, pretty much. But, you know, hot rod's a big thing. There are lots of these things that go back a ways. And a weird thing occurred to me as I was putting this together is that, and this is something, probably a thought that nobody has ever had before. There are a lot of parallels you can draw between hot rods and jazz music, believe it or not.
Okay. This I'm waiting for. Yes, please.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, they both originated in the United States. Neither one is easy to define. And in fact, there's many disagreements about the definitions and meanings. And both contain a certain amount of both rebelliousness and conformity. And right. They both have just myriad, endless, infinite flavors and variations and styles.
That's fair. That's true.
This is a really deep show. I feel like I'm going to trot out some Jungian psychology.
But no, you know, where did hot rods come from? And there's probably some psychology here too. Of course, there's always that human competitive nature. There's always that. Seems like anytime people invent something, somebody else says, "Oh well, how can I make this go a little faster or do a little better or whatever?" You know, people have been racing cars since the beginning of automobiles, but the actual hot rod, the thing we think of as such, where somebody took a used car and really souped it up, and as near as I can find, the American culture seems to have started somewhere in the 1920s, but didn't really get going till after World War II. And I think everybody knows all the reasons involved from that, with the, you know, returning airmen and all that sort of thing. But you really think about it, this is the hot rod is a bigger thing in modern life than a lot of us realize. You know, how many things have we referred to as having been hot rodded that were not cars?
Not even just not cars. With a hot rod being a specific genre, so many people refer to a lot of cars as a hot rod. My dad used to call my 83 Mustang a hot rod, and no, it wasn't. It's a specific genre, you know, a specific class, not necessarily a make or model, though.
Well, but that goes back to it being in the eye of the beholder, that nobody can really agree on a single definition.
See, I thought somewhere, if you dug around, because there's lots of little ones, like I was kind of mentioning with the rat rod and the rust rod, and I know there's others. I thought that somewhere there would be a clear definition as to how you qualify for which.
All right. So Becca.
Yes.
I just went to dictionary.com and I typed in hot rod, and it says, and this I think verifies Ben's point, it says that hot rod is a noun. Specifically, it's a type of slang that means an automobile specifically built or altered for fast acceleration and increased speed.
See, I find that to be failing. I think that is a weak definition, because then that would qualify pretty much any car with a tune.
Well, I think that even then it's way too vague. It says either specifically built or altered. So in my mind, a hot rod is something that's altered.
That's why I was saying any car with a tune could qualify. I find that failing because I've always seen it to be more of a culture. So, you know, I'm going to do some digging. I'm going to see what I can find out. I don't know. I'm not saying that I'm going to be able to find more than Ben has been able to. I know he's very into the car scene and all of that. I'm just saying there's got to be something.
Any car with a tune, you know, pretty well describes a Deuce Coupe in the 50s that some kid has messed around with.
A Deuce Coupe in the 50s, not your 1992 Civic that you put some stickers on,
but the goal is the same.
That's right. Well,
the intention is totally the same, to take an ordinary car and make it faster.
I think the Civic's goal is to just brag about something and not actually race it.
No, wait, just to be clear, you're talking about stickers, and I'm thinking about a K&N filter and maybe an exhaust, at which point my Civic is now a hot rod.
Exactly. Well, if your goal was to make it go faster, I guess.
You know, just to complicate this a little bit also, but I'd love your metaphor, Ben, of hot rod culture being like jazz and something uniquely American. But the interesting thing, you know, back in the early part of my career, I was spent a lot of my time, a lot of my career in Europe. And there is a huge hot rod culture in Sweden and Finland.
Whoa. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. In fact, that there are, you know, big meets in Varberg, Sweden. And what's funny to your point, Becca, is because there's very little, you know, I think the term is vintage tin that you use to build hot rods. The hot rods in Sweden are usually like on homemade chassis, or you know, like that they're making replicas of Model T's or Model A's out of fiberglass. Mm. Or sometimes they build them using a Volvo chassis. Mm-hmm. Rod Civic,
I can completely understand the Volvo chassis, or actually the Volkswagen was what was popping into my head. The Volkswagen chassis would be great.
And there are people over here who do that too, because the supply of actual, you know, old vintage Fords and such is, you know, pretty limited right now.
Well, that's what it used to be about. It was taking a really old car And depending on your level of restoration would be which group you fell into, if you were hot rod or rust rod, or, you know, obviously the rust still had rust all over it.
Right. All right. So good stuff, Ben. What else you got for Ben taking a moment on hot rods?
Oh, that's about it. I think everybody's had a lot of fun with it, and I encourage keeping your brains out on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Becca, I want to, if you do this in another, you know, new segment with Becca, we need to, I'd be up for that.
The still as yet unnamed new segment with Becca. Right. This week I'm calling it Fred.
You're calling it what?
Winifred.
Winifred. See, has anybody written in with any?
I've not seen a segment for renaming the. I've not seen an email for renaming the segment. No.
Oh, come on, guys. What do we need to offer? We apparently need to offer our listeners something.
Typically, Wheels with Winifred.
Wheels with Winifred.
Right.
Why do I feel like that little girl from the Wonder Years?
I don't know, but we are running out of time, so let's move on. And for listener mail, I've got a couple more worst cars you've ever owned pieces to share here. The first one's very short and sweet, and my friend Lisa says the first car I ever bought for myself for only $800. She doesn't say when, but for only $800 was a used red Pinto. She said my friends in college called it the little red fireball of death.
Nice. Poor Pinto. See, again, Pintos get smacked around quite a bit.
Yeah. And we talked about that last time. We don't think the Pintos really deserve the designation, but it's stuck.
Ralph Nader didn't write a book about them.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Exactly.
So Jennifer writes, the worst car she ever bought was a 1985 Honda Accord. She was my first car purchased with my own money. I bought her in 2001 while I was a college student. I knew nothing of cars and trusted the guy I bought it from. That was mistake number one.
So many
she says,
jokes.
That was mistake number one. Then she says, I was stubborn and kept pouring more money into fixing the POS. Parts included a fuel pump, starter, alternator, and random cosmetic things. I named my car Phoebe and would frequently call her Ursula when she broke down. Mm-hmm. That would be a Friends reference, I think.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I never watched the show, so I would not have gotten the Friends reference.
Her evil twin.
Yeah.
Ursula was Phoebe's evil twin, in case anybody doesn't.
Got it.
It's like my evil twin, Binky.
Oh, I have such a funny joke. I wish I could tell you guys. I know we're running out of time, though.
You're going to have to circle back on that. So, Jennifer then says, I didn't have the money for a new starter for several months, so I kept a screwdriver in the console and asked random people to help me crank my car by either tapping the starter or turning the key when I tapped the starter. The transmission went out gear by gear. First reverse went out completely. I had to be careful where I parked. Eventually, no gears and a quote of $1,200 for a car that I paid $1,000 for were deciding factors in just selling it. I took the money and I bought a new camera. A Nikon I had had my eyes on for months. I decided walking with the new camera was a great trade-off.
There you go.
She says, P.S., the camera was $400, and I think I got $800 for the POS car, so I was also able to get an extra lens, film, paper, and supplies. And then she became a fine arts major focusing on photography, so it had something to do with her future there. So that's Jennifer's story. And if viewers have stories to share, viewers, if listeners, if our friends and our Thing About Cars family folks have stories that they can share about their worst cars or their best ones, please go to our website, thethingaboutcars.com, and share your information with us, and we'll happily retell those stories on the show.
My hat's off to Jennifer, because I've had relationships I didn't work that hard on.
Right. And side note, what year was her Accord?
85.
That's the same year. You didn't mention a clutch. I had a friend with a 1985 Honda Accord that his clutch went out every 500 miles.
Oh, goodness. 500 miles?
Every 500 miles. Jeez. He was forever calling me from somewhere having work done, or come pick me up, or, hey, this is where I'm at.
That's so weird.
His clutch was always going out on that car. And it was a stick, FYI, if that makes any difference to anybody.
It was the car. It wasn't him, was it?
It wasn't him. No.
Okay. All right, so let's wrap the episode. Let's do some quick Grand Trivia Auto. The first one is, what some of the rarest Camaros are referred to as Copos or Capos. What does COPO stand for? Was it Chevrolet Official Performance Order? Was it Central Office Production Order? Does COPO stand for Chevrolet Optimum Performance Order? Or lastly, the last choice is Camaro Official Production Order.
I'll go with the third one. Sorry.
I've already given some hints. Like the term Copo has been applied to other cars as well, not just Camaros. So I think that rules out Camaro official production order for this purpose. But so Becca's saying Chevrolet Optimum Performance Order. What do you say, Dave?
I'm with Becca on this one. I think Optimum Performance Order.
Ben?
I'm going with Central Office.
Central Office is correct.
Well, you know why I picked the third one?
Why?
I was taking my cues from you, Mickey. You put greater emphasis on that one than any of the others. All the other three you were flat on, but when you listed that third one, you gave it a lot more oomph when you said it. So I was taking my cue from you.
I was trying to chew my words and make sure I didn't stumble.
He was using his poker voice.
I was moving my poker voice.
Not well on his third one.
All right,
wow.
All right. So with less than 2 minutes to go in this episode, let's say this is the one that I flubbed earlier before it became the Camaro. What was it called? Was it a switchback, a panda, a penguin, or a panther? Ben, what do you think?
Well, I tend to think panther because that's kind of the most macho of them. Although switchback would be cool too.
Yes. Dave, what about it?
Because of my research, I am certain it's the panther.
Wait, now our options were what? Panther, penguin, panda, and
switchback.
So shouldn't it be all P's and have like POS at the end?
Well, you're gonna have to choose one because we've got less than a minute in this recording.
Then I will go with the panther.
Panther is correct. Initially, the car in development was known as the Panther and a bunch of other names before it became the Camaro. Over 2,000 names were considered, apparently, while the car was in its incubation period. And by 1966, the automotive press was rife with stories of the Chevrolet Panther. So everyone who said Panther is correct. And that's it. Cool.
Yay.
Thanks, you guys. And Becca, you've got something to work on for your next news segment. And that's it. Thanks to all of our listeners for joining us for another episode of The Thing About Cars. Please contact us via our Facebook page or the website. And in the meantime, we hope you and yours are staying safe out there. Take care.
Bye.
Later.
Later.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.